Decoded Podcast, Season 4, Episode 28. Chris, I'm obese.
That's can I show you? Start. So, actually, I like that. Can I also show you the picture for today? I'm done it already.
You're done? So, I guess we can. This is going to be the shortest podcast episode ever.
I don't know. But as soon as you see it, you're going to know where to, you're going to know what to do next.
Okay.
Just give me 1 sec. Roland, I heard you. Thank you for sharing your truth about your obesity. Okay, so check it out. And you're going to know what to do with this right away.
Oh, nice. The chicken burger, baby.
As soon as you said it. Yeah, as soon as you said it, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna jump the queue here and just start designing it out. So there it is. Here's the graphic for today, chicken burger.
Okay, so I'm obese, which would be a great title. Roland is obese. So I'm going to keep that there for now.
Okay.
So first things first. So I declare that I'm obese. You show us the picture, which usually takes 40 minutes to be created, has been created. So it's a chicken.
Well, we've been talking for 40 minutes. So
that's true. I set this up so that we go live at 9 a.m. Wishful thinking, I guess, 9:38. Yep. And here we are. But
pretty good.
So the chicken burger is there, but I got to say, I'm going to be eating some kind of cake today. And that's all I can say because it's not for me to say, but I'm going to be celebrating something today, something about Chris Clough. And if he wants to talk about it, great. And if he doesn't, that's fine too. But so I'm obese and I'm going to keep it going with a piece of cake to do some celebration at some point today.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you feel free to talk, but if you're not going to say anything right now, I want to dive into colonialism with you.
Let's do it.
Okay. So you and I talked on.
To be honest, that's way more important than any sort of like celebratory. Like, we'll pause for a moment there and say, I think that's a better topic for us to dig into than we can get to, you know, some interesting news about me later. Because no one's going to argue that colonialism does need some work in. It needs some work in. So let's go there.
Okay, fair enough. I disagree with you. I think it should be the other way around, but whatever. Colonialism, it's everywhere, and people are pushing back against it now. People are pushing back against it to say, why do we function this way? Why are some of these requirements to do certain things or to be certain people, why are they the requirements that they are? And you had said earlier to me that it's because, you know, it's the white people that came over and needed to contain their power to ensure that they could still be in control of who they were and their destiny. And
that's good. That's good. Actually, I like that. The containers, what are the lock boxes? The lock boxes that store colonial power.
Yes. And who has the combination to the locks?
Well, I think the great and frightening thing is, there's a general bank that colonialists are able to draw from. It's like their boxes are connected via Wi-Fi. But it's like colonial Bitcoin. They all have access to the same. Everyone recognizes that there's power to it, knows that it can be converted into other currencies. And because it's kept away and protected under coding and, you know, digital lockdown, we're now in a space where individuals that have access to it, they simultaneously have access to their own power, their own share, their own slice of the pie, and the actual strength of the currency is fortified by the network that it's held in. So these digital currency lock boxes. But I think it doesn't have to be digital. The metaphor here is that it's a shared wealth.
But here's the thing. So I hear people yelling and screaming loud and clear that we need to do something about this. We need to do something about all these lock boxes that only certain people have access to. My position these days is, yes, we do, but we can also, because we can't eliminate it completely automatically. And I don't believe that it would be beneficial for all of us to be different than the colonialists all at the same time. So I like the middle ground. So learn about how they work and how they operate. Infiltrate. Let them in. Let them let you in. Let them give you the code to the locks so that you can unlock those boxes and you can start showing off what's inside. That's kind of where I see myself right now. So let's go colonial for a second. I have an undergraduate degree. I have a teacher's degree. And I've got a master's degree. Okay, so check, check, check.
Welcome to the club, Roland.
Thank you. It's good to be part of the club. Thank you for letting me in.
It's good to have you here.
Unfortunately, because I've earned those degrees from accredited universities, it means that my voice is given some validity, whether people like it or not. And whether I have the degrees or not, having the degrees allows the colonials to stop and listen to me because I check off their boxes. Thank you, Dad, for teaching me how to code switch that way. It's all because of my dad that I have these three degrees, really. It's also because of I'm not going to blame my dad, but part of learning how to be colonial and how to fit in with them and to code switch meant that for me personally, I did not truly learn about my culture the way that now I wish I had. Mm-hmm. But it's too late. I'm an old man now. I can only learn from what's happening to me these days. I can't go back and change it. But I will tell you that having those three degrees, working with some of the people I work with, within the system I work in, the education system, I'm learning, right? I'm learning how the colonial influences of operation. But somebody's given me the keys. I have keys now. My voice has some validity. And so I can slowly express my thoughts and opinions and actionable items that don't fall in line with the colonial tradition and the way that whole understanding and concept holds power, right? They've let me in, and now they're going to have to deal with what they have. And I'm sure they have a way to do that. There is the colonial back door. They know how to kind of
move. Well, trapdoor.
Sorry.
Well, the back door. Yeah, it could be. Someone coming up beside you. So they, excuse me, sir. Can we just have a conversation in this room? And then you walk through the room, and you realize it's actually a door to the outside. You're like, oh, what?
And then the door closes and it's locked.
Yeah. You're like, okay. Right? And then you go looking for the front door again and it's like mysteriously disappeared.
I wanted to throw that in there because I do believe at the moment there is no harm in understanding how it works. That's, I guess, there is no harm in understanding how things work and why they work and questioning where it's come from. This is really a big thing to me these days. In fact, here's another good one for you. It's what's recently caused me to not apply for a position of responsibility in my school board.
Mm.
Now, there are layers. Anybody who knows me knows that there's layers. But one of the layers is I've got some questions that have not been answered to my satisfaction. And because what's that saying you said? Not what's holding me back, but what's holding me here.
Yeah.
What's holding me here now is good. I like what's holding me here. So I don't feel like I'm losing anything by not moving in that formal direction. I'm not losing anything. Right. So in combination with being comfortable with what's holding me here now and the questions I have that aren't, it's funny because I trust some of the people that are within this system, who operate within the system and have leadership within the system. I have connection. I have rapport. I feel good. It's more questions about the system and how the system works, because I've learned that just because there are people you trust and appreciate and support you, they don't speak for the system. It's one of those things where they support you, and then the system says, you're going to do this now. And you look around at your support system and you say, uh-oh, The system's telling me to do this now. And they look at you and say, well, you better do what the system's telling you to do. And I'm like,
yeah, a big old yup.
That's what the system's telling you to do. And I don't have the fluency or the experience to understand how to sidestep what the system's saying. Sometimes that's good, sometimes that's bad. And in this situation, again, it comes back to fluency and understanding. So I'm talking to you right now and I'm looking up. But if I were to look down for a second, when I look down, I see the two mentees that I'm working with through the NTIP program in my school board. And when they ask me questions about pedagogy, assessment, evaluation, and other things, they say, Roland, this is what's in front of me. I'm not sure what to do with it or how to deal with it in a way that's somewhat efficient and effective. And I can speak to what they're asking, not only because I have experience doing it, but I also understand the system, like as much as I think I do. I understand how the system is built around these topics of interest. And I know I can see three or four different ways to answer their question. And I always do provide them with a number of different answers because I don't know their story. I don't know where they come from. I don't know their true context. I just know that there's this thing in front of them. But here's the thing. This is what I always say to them. You're going to love this because it connects with the people that support me in helping me move towards formal leadership. I tell my mentees, this is my answer to your question. But then I say, but I'm not your principal. So you need to remember that. You're working within a framework that I don't know. Because I don't know who your boss is. You need to know who your boss is. Mm-hmm. So I tell you, this is my answer. This is what I would do based on who my boss is. But I'm not your boss. So you could say to your boss, but Roland told me this. And they might look at you and say, I don't care what Roland says. I'm the system. This is what I'm telling you to do. This is what I'm asking you to do.
That's a funny turn of phrase you just said. Would you think it'd be that explicit? Someone would say, I'm the system? Or do you think it would be framed as, we're all servants of the system? Or this is the system that we all operate under? But that's a funny turn of phrase because you could, I agree. I have worked with leaders where my sense of their sense of the system is that they are the system. And there's elements of impunity there that I recognize right away as connected with colonialism. You know, individuals that are, in their mind, running a school, if that's, I think, your perception, that you are running a school, well, I think if you use the language of running a school, it just falls too close to already established economic terms of running a business. And you end up double dipping in the language. And I think people notice, right? They notice. So that was an interesting little, the way that you said that, I noticed.
It connects to an OECTA thing that a colleague of mine used to always say, where I'd say, well, I can't do this. And he's like, why not? And I'm like, because I'm not OECTA. And he's like, yes, you are OECTA. Together we are OECTA. This is what OECTA is. It's not the president of OECTA. I know. I'm just saying, he just says you are OECTA. So if this is how you feel, start moving in that direction and you will find support.
Oh, so I'm taking my PQP right now, right?
That's correct.
And we, the PQP2, there, I just threw it on my credentials.
Colonial,
I got to walk right through the front door. That's what I did. You know what I did? I wish I had a wallet here. You know what I did? Just held up my card at the door. And they're like, go on through.
When you say you're in PQP2, it means a lot. Boom. It means like 100 things happened before you walked into that door.
So I like that you said that because inside, so you get inside the lockbox. So now I'm standing in the wealth. I'm standing there, you know, looking at the riches that are possible because I'm in the space of taking, you know, a PQP. So I just want to walk you into a conversation that we had that There was a conversation where we were listening to we had to check out some videos from a dude, Anthony Muhammad, and he was a speaker that came to Quest, so York Region's Quest, a few years back. I didn't go to that Quest. I didn't see him the first time around. And the video was sort of chopped up, and we had to do a task with it. But then we had sort of small table discussions afterwards. And the question came up around collaborative leadership. And this is it's fascinating to me because it espouses this idea that it's kind of the best version of leadership. Like, if according to, we're reading another book by Peter DeWitt, and he throws down, so you've got negotiators, collaborators, bystanders, and regulators. So these sort of four styles of leadership, and saying that, you know, collaborators are you're all of them at some point, but there's like this push that collaborative leadership is the best. And in our discussion, all the discussion was starting with, we are all collaborators, why can't we do better? And I said in the conversation, but what if individuals don't have access to the tools, the power, the doors? They don't have access to the keys of actually becoming a collaborator, as in who's not in the room as leaders. And there was some silence there. Like, that was one of those like, okay, yeah, okay, thanks, Clough. But that's kind of like, I needed to start before there was a discussion that had to be had before we could even start to talk equitably about why collaborative leadership is a good idea. And I think that's kind of what you're touching on here, is that there's spaces, like I said, I hold up my PQP card, like, thank you very much. I'm not at the VIP table, but I'm getting pretty close to the front near the stage. Pretty close, right? If I were taking this in real IRL face to face, and if I were taking my board, it's likely the director would have been at a couple of my classes, right? And would have been playing some sort of promotional kind of role of, thank you for all showing your interest in leadership. And as I would be sitting there, as I am sitting here now, I'm thinking to myself, okay, you're welcome, I'd be thinking. But that also be thinking, like, who isn't here? Like, who's not in the room right now? Who didn't make the cut? And I get it that really, if you want to take a PQP, it's such a standardized checklist of experiences. It's course. You pay, you get certain course, you pay for courses, which means you get to take the next course. You do have to have an approval from your SO to say that you do have the right experience, but there's no, as far as taking the courses for that, the fundamental specific barrier to taking PQPs is money. That's what it is. And then once you have, because you have to pay for the PQPs, and in order to take PQPs, you have to pay potentially to take AQs or a master's, or like, you have to pay to sort of get to that space. So already we have this kind of ascension, if we look at it as vertical through leadership, that is entirely based in bureaucratic, economical, and colonial sort of understanding of the value of learning. If you can afford to, then you can learn more. And by virtue of that, if you do have the money or the circumstance to get the money, then you will eventually become a better leader. There's that promise in there, right? So I thought the discussion around who's actually accessing, who can access those lock boxes of colonialism is just, it's a really, I'm not pulling any sort of profundity yet. I don't think it might not be profound, but it's fascinating to me. And the whole idea that if we are talking about collaboration is the best space to be in, well, I think that there's a prequel to that movie, and we have to talk about who has access to even the concept of collaboration. I love how this ties into yours and my conversation around, you know, conflict of interest and making sure that there's individuals in that room, the power of individuals already being in that room that you feel you have an affinity with, and you want them to stay in the room so that you can build capacity and have other individuals in the room that either feel it's not just enough to be like-minded. They got to look like you. Can't just be like-minded.
I don't have that. I won't have that in my board. I don't have that. So right now when I'm sitting in a room and I have allies in the room, they don't look like me, but they know of me. They not only know my reputation, they know my character, because they've actually, it's not about hearing about who I am and what I've done.
They've actually, know your story.
They know me. They've worked with me on a committee or in a school, whatever. They've spent time where they've had to deal with me, collaborating with them, or me speaking my mind and my opinion, or them understanding that I have a family and they mean something to me. You know, I wish that there were more people that looked like me, but in my reality, that is not my reality. So for me, allyship, true allyship in a room, yes, would be people who know me and look like me, but that's not my case. So I'm taking it, you know, level two. Level two is, you know, if I can be in a room with my current principal, my former vice principal, and other principals that I've worked with and consultants I've worked with and know me, then that's huge. Even superintendents that know me, that worked with me, that have, we've collaborated on projects and I've had to do my part and they've had to do their part and we've all come through and done it, and they hear me talk and they hear me, they hear what I'm thinking. That's what it means to me now, allyship, because there aren't people that look like me. I want to go back for a second. I want to make a connection to the check boxes. I never understood what my father wanted me to do up until now. My father basically came to this country. No, this is the coolest thing. So my father comes to this country, loves Canada, loved Canada. He didn't let go of who he was. He didn't let go of his Lebanese background and who he was and who he is. But it's almost like he wanted me to have the best of both worlds, but I didn't have the capacity to do it personally. But my father basically, you know, always said to me, everything you do, do it as well as you can and stay in the game as long as you can and move up the ranks as fast as you can for as long as you can. And I remember thinking, what a pain in the rear end this is, that my dad was always looking to the next thing. I now understand why. I really understand why. He knew this game. He knew how it was played. He was a smart man, so he was at the bottom of the totem pole here, but he knew what you had to do to get to the top of the totem pole. He was just too old, too tired, and didn't have the financial wherewithal to make it happen. He just didn't have it, but he knew in theory what to do, and he was basically grooming me to do it, you know. So I'll never forget when I got my Bachelor of Education. It was always my father's dream that I would become educated. And I got my bachelor's degree and he was really proud of me. And then when I told him I was going to teacher's college, well, when I talked about that option, he was like, go for it. I mean, it's more education. It's going to be good for you, just like the way you sold it. I sold it to him, right? I'm in the middle of my B.Ed. And I say to him, Dad, I'm going to be doing my master's next year. And he was like, really? Like he told me after, he thought that I was just going to be happy to have a meal ticket and go get a job. I'm like, no, I want a master's degree. I want to do that for me. And after I got my master's degree, he was so proud, like, because his vision was for his children to become educated, because he knew no matter where you live, whether it's a messed up system like in the Middle East or here in Canada, where it's messed up in the colonial hoops you have to jump through, but at least it's relatively transparent compared to the Middle East. He's like, he was so proud of me that I got my master's degree, because he knew people would then listen to me. He knew that I could get in, I could unlock locks, and I could get in doors that I would not be able to get in without an education. He just knew it. And he's like, when you have the education, you can use it to your advantage, or you can just put it aside, right? You can't walk into a place and lie that you have a master's degree. Well, you could, but if you get caught, you're screwed. So you could go into a room and not tell anybody you have any degrees, or you could walk up to a door where it says master's only And you're like, yeah, I've got one. They're like, yeah, you're full of baloney. You're like, no, I'm not. Here's my card. They're like, shoot, we got to let this guy in. So his thing was get as much as you can, as quick as you can, so that if you need it, you have it. But mm-hmm. you don't always need to have it, you know? And really, a side note, when I work, when I was doing my undergrad, I worked at a grocery store and I worked night crew. And for all intents and purposes, night crew guys are a different breed of people, generally speaking, from my observations and from the people I actually spoke to. Okay. Yep.
That's the same in the restaurant biz. If you were working the days, everyone works hard in their own way, but the individuals, I'll say back in the restaurant that I had on my crew for Friday and Saturday nights or show nights, because it was across from a theater, we were a different bunch. And there was few people that were as good, that were good at both of them. I also was for a year or two when I was in high school, I was a pin chaser at a local bowling arena. And I did the Friday night shift, which was an overnighter because on Fridays to Saturdays, the bowling alley was open 24 hours. So I would go in at like 4 o'clock on a Friday and I would come out at like 6 a.m. on Saturday. And I was the only one there for the overnighter because it wasn't busy, but there was like the overnight snack bar person, like out there, dude. The overnight manager out there as well. And then there's me in the back diving into the backs of the lanes, trying to fix when the mechanisms were broken or the machinery wasn't working. I was in there working on them. So yeah, we were all, it was the island of, it was the bowling alley of misfits. So I get it.
That was like the grocery store. So I'm doing my B.Ed, right? My B.A. I'm doing my B.A. and I'm working at night in this grocery store. And I had done some work at the university and I was in the newspaper. And so you're going to love this. So it's like 4 a.m, we're on our break. The newspapers get dropped off in front of us. Like the guy pulls up and tosses like a bunch of them. And one of the guys would always crack it open, start reading the newspaper, which he wasn't supposed to, but he did it anyway. Mm-hmm. He's like, what the? And he said a word that I can't use here. And we're like, what? He goes, Roland, you're in the newspaper. And we're all sitting there outside the grocery store having our break, you know? And he's like, what is this? It was like, they never knew that I was in university. So then they start razzing me, right? And one of the, we called them, the guys that worked there full time, were older and had families, we called them lifers. They called themselves lifers. One of the lifers says to me, you know what? He looks at me, he goes, don't pay any attention to what they're saying right now. They're broken. And he starts naming them and explaining how they're broken, where they're like, this guy was a fountain of knowledge. And he goes, look at this one. He's broken. And he tells me his story. He goes, look at this one. This one's broken. They would all trade in whatever they have now to be in your shoes. You have two parents that love you. You live at home. You have no criminal history. And you're in university. He's like, I have no idea why you even work here. I don't. But he goes, but you do. So you hang out with us and you do your job. You know, he's like, you do your job. He goes, don't listen to them. Keep doing what you're doing. Get out of here. And I was like, I was going to cry. I was like, this guy doesn't talk to people like that. So whatever it is that set him off, it was good stuff. And I was like, it was like my dad was sitting beside me at the grocery store. And it's one of those things, you know, the misfits. I loved 90% of those guys.
Me too.
I loved 90% of those guys, you know.
I was always a little scared. I have to admit, every shift I went into, I was a little scared. I'm like, I'm not quite sure what's going to happen. Because I will tell you, the people that would come out and bowl at 3 a.m. in the morning were only slightly more scary to me than the three-man crew that I was working with at 3 in the morning, right? I can't tell you how many times I'd come out from the back and there'd be like one bowl. So just imagine this. You come out. So imagine the bowling alley I worked at had like 30 lanes. So it was a big size bowling alley, right? There were only two doors that you could come out from the back. One of them came right through the middle of the bowling alley. So you're actually walking down this sort of narrow platform right between lane 15 and 16. And then the other one was all the way down at the far end by lane one. And those are the only two spots you could actually come to the front. And so the desk where the person should be is somewhere around lane 18. So for whatever reason, I couldn't come up between the lanes. I came up from lane one and it's like miles away from the desk. And I look out and there's nobody in there. Like there's nobody in there. There's no clients. I can't see the person at the snack bar. The front desk person's not there. And I come out like I'm 16 or 17 years old. I'm like, what the hell? Where's that? Where is everybody? And I got real scared. I'm like, okay, so now I'm the only one doing this. Cause there was no backspaces at the snack bar and the back office was closed. So you either were standing right there at the snack bar cause the kitchen was right there or you're at the front desk. So I waited. And they both come back in through the front door. They're outside doing something and they come in laughing. I'm like, and these were older guys too, right? Like they were sort of in their 30s or 40s. They weren't a teen. I got the job because I bowled there. So they said they had this one shift. But it was scary. For me, it was a little scary.
I didn't have that same, like, because once you were in the building, that's it. The 12 guys in the building. And I call them guys because there was never any ladies. The 12 mm-hmm. guys working, it was contained. You saw them almost every shift or whatever. But I found out after. So one of the reasons they were chirping me was because they didn't know what I did during the day. Only a few of the guys knew I was in university, right? And then, you know, I found out, and when I say I love these guys, like I was spending like a lot of my nights, I was spending half my day at work with these guys and hearing their stories and, mm-hmm. and, you know, befriending them. Like it's funny when they would see me during the day out doing whatever, they give you the nod, like, hey, we know you, we get you, you know? And I found out after that, they had a lot of respect for me for not walking around saying I'm in university, I'm this, I'm that. When I was there, I just did my job. I punched in, I joked with them, I laughed with them, you know, we worked well together. And I'll never forget, he opened the paper. He's like, what the, Roland, you're in the newspaper? Like, read the article, you know, it'll tell you why I'm in the newspaper. But it was just like, what are you doing here? It's 4 o'clock in the morning and you're in the newspaper? There's major conflict here. None of this works. I told them, boys, I'd be out of here in an instant. I can't get a real job. And they just laugh at me. I'm like, I remember one summer I applied to like 50 jobs, didn't even get a call. I'm like, mm-hmm. And all my friends who are in university have these great day jobs, getting paid hand over fist kind of money. And I'm making like $8.75 at the grocery store every night for an hour, like $8.75 an hour, dying. And then wake up and try to go to school the next morning, right? It was just
nuts. Oh, yeah, that was – I can remember them asking me one time because they were thinking of extending the 24-hour thing to Thursday nights. And I was already working the Friday. And they said, do you want that shift? I'm like, oh – I don't think I can do that, man. I said, I have to go to school Friday morning. So I love it. The overnighters. I also had another overnight gig when I was in university at Shortstop. So I think it was called Little Shortstop. Maybe just Shortstop.
No, it's Little Shortstop.
Is it Little Shortstop? It's like a convenience store chain out, well, my way in Guelph. I don't know if it makes it out to Waterloo way.
Yeah.
So I was the 8:30 p.m. till 5:30 a.m. guy for a year and change there, and it the first half of it wasn't so bad because my buddy worked in the Subway, just two stores over. So if neither one of us were busy, we'd just be leaning in the doorway, kind of talking to each other. But he was off at midnight. So then that's a long stretch in the convenience store world to be there from 12 to 5:30 in the morning till the morning person came in. But again, like the people you meet, I had a similar, just last thing I'll throw in. I had a more restaurant jobs than not. That was the thing that got me through high school. And I was working for a franchise called O'Toole's, and it's not around anymore. Always still endearing to me. It was sort of like when Casey's wasn't a thing like it is now, those were like your McDonald's and Burger King, right? O'Toole's and Casey's were kind of like your two roadhouse superstars. And they were both holding their own, right? This is, I think, before big restaurant chains kind of bought stuff up. Casey's got bought up by a conglomerate. O'Toole's kind of faded out of, I think Casey's had a little bit more of a family feel to it. O'Toole's was very much like they kind of based, like it was a bar, like they kind of a bar first, right? So I was working there all through high school and I enjoyed it, but they used to call me, they started calling me Ivy League.
Oh,
I haven't told you the story. They used to call me Ivy League because they were all like, so before that was the place I worked and I made all my money at in order to go to university. But I had started as a dishwasher, made it up to sort of like line cook, then made it to line supervisor. And it was right around line cook, line supervisor that that it came out that I was saving money for university. And they're like, oh, such, you know, big shot Ivy League, you know, Clough going off to university. And it just got shortened down to Ivy. And that was like my nickname while I was working there. They called me Ivy. Bizarre, eh?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Those were some of the days that those days made us who we are today, right? Those days,
yeah, absolutely. Nights,
made us who we are today.
The night shifts.
I just wrote that down, the midnight shift. Yep. It's something. The people you meet and the characters you deal with, it's something.
When I was at that little shortstop, there was a dude that would always come in and he would just come in to talk and he'd leave. Like he would never buy anything. He would just come in. He's like, hey, how's it going? Great to see ya. And it was always like around the strange time, like between 3 and 4 AM in the morning.
Yep,
like
yep.
If you're up late, here's the thing I've observed in it. So I think back on my university days, like being up late was sort of like 2 to 3 o'clock. Like that's late. If you're awake like between 3 and 4 or 3 and 4:30, like that's a totally different kind of up late, because that's about as long as you can say you're up late, because as soon as you tip to 5 o'clock, you're up early.
Right.
Right. So like for me right now, I'm up early. I generally get up at like 5:30 AM. So I'm up early. But it's just funny. And this dude would come in like between 3:30, 4 o'clock. Sometimes he'd come in with like a lunch pail of food. Like he actually brought kind of food. Like he'd be eating a sandwich, but not like a sandwich you got at a store. Like he's eating like 2 slices of bread and a sandwich. Came in like with a cup of coffee, but like a mug of coffee. He's not walking in with like a takeout. Came in his house coat one time, and I thought, oh, it's all over for me. I was like, the house coat. But he was wearing shorts and a t-shirt underneath. Cause as I'm standing there, I'm like, oh crap. And I drank a lot of coffee. I'm like, oh crap. His belt's loosening. And I sort of looked over cause the counter was raised. Like you would have to step up on a platform. It was like one of those convenience stores. You were kind of up a little bit higher than the customer.
Right.
And, I look over and there's like the door that they would come in, that customers would come in, the access to come in behind the cash, the door was there too. It wasn't enclosed. It was just like this little kind of like, and I looked over, I'm like, oh, and that's not completely closed either. Cause I was just restocking some stuff in the back. And then I'm looking over at the dude. I'm like, damn, his belt's coming loose. And he's just standing there like, yeah, Maple Leafs. Yeah. Whoa, the weather today. And I'm looking, I can just see slowly the ties on his belt. I'm like, this isn't going to be good. Dude's wearing a house coat. Then it falls open. He's wearing a t-shirt and shorts. I'm like, thank you, universe.
Those are the quasi 911 calls where your hand is going towards the phone, but you're not.
The phone was near that. The thing is that the phone was near there over there too. And it was on the counter. Like it wasn't mounted in an easily accessible place. Yeah, everything about it, just like in slow motion.
You're not ready to pull the trigger on the 911, but you're definitely, you know where that phone is, right?
Like just little like alarms going off.
So this reminds me of when I did work at overnight in the grocery store. There was a solid crew of like 10 to 14 of us that were like, we were there often. And then every now and again, the night crew manager would hire some guy off the street to come in, and they never lasted long. And we knew why. We thought we were different. They were like different. I remember this one guy from, so first shift, he's from Montreal. So he's got broken English, but he seemed funny or whatever. And here's the other thing too. There's a rank and order, right? So if you're walking in off the street, then you're doing the frozen food aisle. Like yeah. Chidiac's not doing frozen food tonight. I'm getting the cereal aisle and you're getting
Yeah, you know you're being punished if you're stuck in frozen foods.
Yeah, so so he walks in and they're like, okay, here's a coat. Like here's like a Loblaws coat. Put it on because you're going to need it. Maybe next shift bring a toque if you want. Here are some gloves. You're doing frozen juice and frozen food. And he's like, okay, you know, whatever. We get to our first break and he's like, who wants to trade with me? And we're like, we don't think you understand how this works. There is no trading. You were given your job and you're going to do it. By lunchtime, he's like, I'm really cold. I'm cold. I can't do this anymore. And we're like, well, are you almost done? And he's like, I don't know. Because he had no bearing of like what he had no fluency, no bearing, nothing to compare to. He didn't know if he was halfway done or not. And then I remember saying to him, me and a couple of guys said, listen, by last break, we should be done our aisles. We'll come and help you. So he's like, okay, thanks. So I remember walking past the frozen area and he had like at least two skids worth of stuff. And that was a lot for that time of night. Last break comes. We're like, okay, we're going to come help you. We come over and I say to the guys, this isn't cool. They're like, what? I'm like, that's exactly what was there when I saw him at lunch. And they looked at me. They're like, we're pulling the pin. We're not going to help him. This is ridiculous. Like we told them we'd help him. So now it's a universe within a universe within a universe. So
I know. Yeah.
We're looking at each other and we're like, I'm like, guys, we can't just leave him hanging dry. And they're like, no, think about this for a second, Chidiac. Think about this. We help him tonight and he comes back tomorrow night. What do you think? You think he's going to do any work in the frozen food aisle? I'm like, guys, this isn't, I'm like, this isn't Wall Street. Like we need to get the stuff done. Right. He didn't come back the next night. We helped him get it done. And he was dying. He was sweating. We're in the frozen food and he's sweating.
Like, you know, there's an issue.
There's an issue. So he didn't come back the next night, but we had people who would start up here and there everywhere. And it's funny because I think I worked my way out of frozen pretty quick. And then every now and again, the night crew chief would just look at me. He's like, you got to help him. This guy's a lost soul. I'm like, man, it's 3:30 in the morning and I'm going to go do frozen after doing two normal aisles. But anyway, you get the banter back and forth, right?
Yep.
Then there was this is the last thing I'll say about this. And then we have to say hi to Ramona because Ramona's here and she's probably thinking, why aren't the
Ramona?
Guys? I'll never forget one shift. It was around, we stopped at 7 or 7:30. So it was about 6:15 in the morning and everybody was pretty much done their aisles. So now we were just facing everything. We were making it all look sharp, making it all look good. And I'm facing an aisle. And I see the lead store manager and he just walks up to me. He goes, good morning. And I'm dying, eh? Like I'm half asleep at this point. And I think I had class at 2 p.m. So I just wanted to get home, eat something, sleep, wake up, shower, go to work, go to school type of thing. And I'm like, I'm good. How are you? He's like, good, good. He goes, I'm just telling all the guys I want to see them before they leave today at the end of the shift. I'm like, yeah, no problem. I'll punch out and I'll come to the front. He's like, great. And he was a serious dude, a real serious dude that nobody liked him. And we're glad we worked nights because we didn't want to work with him. So anyway, I punch out, I come to the front and everybody's at the front, all 10 of us or whatever. And he goes, okay, thanks guys for coming to see me. Everybody put your school bags down because a lot of us would come with our bags with whatever in it, right? He's like, put your school bags down. We're checking everybody's school bags. And we're all looking around at each other. And I'm worried. I'm like, not for me. I'm worried like, oh, man, these are the core guys. They're looking to knock one or two of them off. Who could they be, right? Who's going to lose their job this morning for stealing or whatever? And it was one of those things where he chose. He's like, okay, you're going first. And in front of everybody, he's opening the bag, looking through the bag. So I'm like, oh, this is really not good. So I think I was like the third guy. He's like, open your bag. Okay, I open my bag. He's like, what's this? I'm like, it's my friggin' lunch. Like that's how they were, like, open the container so I can see your food. Okay, open, show him. He's like, okay, you can go. And then the next night I came back, the two guys gone. And then the night crew chief was like, I guess they had been taking stuff every day, every shift, and somebody somewhere saw something, heard something, I don't know. And then every time I'd see those guys in the community, we never talked about it. I'm like, hey, how are you doing? What are you up to? Strangely enough, you know, they're working at the grocery store down the street. Right? So it's like, they just got bumped from one place to the next and nobody's checking credentials. Nobody's checking. Yep. It's like your heart beats and your warm body and you want to work. Come on in. Come on in.
Yep.
But those were, you know, I'm happy that I don't live a life where I'm working a job where they're doing that to me at the end of my shift. Right. Like whatever. So big thumbs up to Ramona. She's been listening to us for a little bit. She wished us a good morning. So yes, Ramona, good morning to you as well. Oh, this was good. Ramona says that she liked our discussion about access to leadership. And it really is a checklist. You have to have the money and you have to have the time. And you're right. Single parents looking after kids or looking after their parents, it's whacked out, right? And even, I don't know people's financial situations. Like I remember when I said to my wife, PQP2 is happening. The instructor is so-and-so. I love so-and-so. The people taking the course, I know from the years of working this board, I want to take this course. She's like, okay. Was money an issue? Well, yeah, it's always hard to just drop a grand on a course, right? Like it's not easy to grab $800 to $1,000, but I was like, well, we have the money. She's like, okay, well, if we have the money and it's not going to hurt us, go for it. So I was able to do that. I was able to say it's not going to hurt us, which a lot of people can't say. Ramona had lots of great nights at O'Toole's.
She knows it. O'Toole's, yep.
And then she also, Ramona is a graduate of the McDonald's program. That's awesome. I never worked at McDonald's. I worked at Wendy's for a little bit.
I never did the fast food. My sister did. But I never, I always had, I never actually, and I mean, I guess O'Toole's and Casey's, it's kind of fast food, but I didn't do the quick service fast food like McDonald's or Burger King. I don't know how it didn't come across my, I think as I jumped into my first restaurant job when I was in grade 9 was with Golden Griddle, which was like a full-on, full-service restaurant. So I think that kind of set my mindset as far as what restaurants would be. Because I never thought after that to go to McDonald's. Like my access point changed and I just kept on moving through that vein. So,
Mona, I wanted so badly to work at the movie theater down the street from my house. I always, my jobs, I guess 90% of the jobs I had before I got a real job.
Drive-in movie theater.
Oh, sorry, Ramona.
No, I'm making sure. Like I saw movie theater. I was like, no, dang, she did drive-in movie theater. Keep going.
So I always had the low-hanging fruit jobs, right? Like the night crew, Wendy's. Like I never had what I would consider a prestigious teenager, early university job. I did have a couple, but they were not long-lasting because they were short-term type jobs. But there was a Cineplex Odeon that opened up down the street, and I remember applying when it was opening, and I was pumped. I'm like, I want to be in this movie theater so bad. Didn't even get an interview. I applied like over the 2-3 years, I applied like 10 times. I don't know what they were looking for. I really don't know what they were looking for. But anyway, I never got to work at the movie theater. But I still today, you know what? Sometimes when I'm sitting here hanging with you, chatting about the work we do as teachers and the stuff that we do as parents, there is something in me. There is something in me that wants to put an application at the movie theater down the street. There really is. There is something in me that wants to put in a part-time application to Lowe's down the street. I would love to work with the wood, with the tools, because those are the things that I don't have to do that full-time now. I have a full-time job. There are things that I would love to do on the side, you know, but it's not to be. Like movie theaters, are we ever going to go back to a movie theater again? I'm so sad. I found refuge in movie theaters. It was ask my wife when the kids were young, that we'd put them to bed. And I'd say, honey, I'm going to the night show tonight with my brother-in-law. We're going to a 10 o'clock show. And she's like, you guys are nuts. I'm like, well, when else are we supposed to go? Mm-hmm. The kids are still awake at 7:30. The next show is at 10. And we really want to see this movie. And I remember we'd be looking at each other at midnight and we're just like we could barely drive home. We were so tired, but we got to go to the movies, you know?
You know what's funny? I used to do that all the time with a buddy. He was living right next door to me. So that's what we would do. Both had young kids. And I would just call him. I'm like, this is playing. Do you want to go? Yeah, for sure. And the funny thing is with that is that I would stay up and watch a movie, you know, starting at 10 p.m. You know, you're rolling out of the movie theater at 1 a.m., depending on what it is. Yet I can go see a movie in the middle of the afternoon. And it's like a movie that my kids want to see. And I'm out. I'm asleep within 30 minutes, right? But those midnight showings of things, I could somehow stay up. The other thing I wanted, that other thing that Ramona mentioned in her message there, she said early in her teaching career. Mm-hmm. So she was teaching and working at the movie theater, the drive-in movie theater.
Props to Ramona.
Yeah.
Here's a good one. Ramona says lots of late nights at the drive-in theater. 3 and 4 movie nights meant we really became night owls, but the day of the dead if you called me before 3 p.m.
Yeah, of Ramona, course.
That was me as well with the night crew. When I'd get home and you'd feel that rush of adrenaline. Like the shift is over. You walk out of the store and there's light. I'm like, this is awesome. And the grocery store wasn't that far from my place. So I'd get in my car and I'd be home in less than 5 minutes. And I'd walk in, and it was hilarious because it was in my first year of university. So my sister was still in high school. My brother was in high school. And my mom and dad would be waking up to go to work. And I walk in, and they're all like, see ya, we're out of here. And I'd be eating my food as the school bus is rolling up to pick everybody up. And then like 8:30 a.m. would hit, and I'm like, gone. I would crawl up the stairs, get into bed, put the covers over and just close my eyes and I was out. But then when I woke up, it was like, okay, get in the shower and get to school. Mm-hmm. And you know, at the time, all I could think about was one day I won't have to do this. Yeah. One day I won't have to do this. But talking to the two of you, I think it's kind of cool that I got to do it and I survived it, right? But to have worked in a movie theater. Oh, that's all I wanted. That's all I wanted, just to take tickets from people or to work concessions or to be the person who walks into the theater when the show is started and to look around and check things off on my
list. Yeah, whatever like, they're looking for. That's all
I wanted, and I couldn't have it. Oh, drive-in theater, eh, Ramona? I bet you had lots of popcorn. I bet you had lots of popcorn. It's also kind of cool that Ramona stepped in when we were talking about the leadership stuff earlier on in our conversation, because once upon a time, the three of us did a podcast around leadership.
I know we haven't made it back to that table.
Do you think we will? I'd like to. Like,
I think so.
I don't think for me it's over.
No.
I think if the three of us gather, I would love to talk about my new issues with leadership and what's holding me back, I guess. Oh, Ramona says she didn't get her permanent contract for a while.
Yeah, the annual pink slip. Oh,
the annual pink slip. See, I was never part of that, thank goodness.
Yeah.
I was never part of that. Lots of popcorn if you had the night off, a free movie.
So you had, and that was the same with the restaurants, right? So often the different restaurants I worked at. Cool. She's still down. Right, yeah. So the restaurant stuff, it was the same thing on our nights off, staff would be coming in, right? Like if you weren't often, if you weren't working karaoke night, you were in there having fun on karaoke night. Mm. Like you're in there eating the, you know, the half price wings and the cheap beer, and you're getting up there and you're singing. And all of us that kind of participated that way saw the value, because if you were a server and you were one of the individuals that was willing to show your brave and get up there and sing on karaoke night, well, that translated into money. It's like, oh, you're the dude that sings a crazy little thing called love. I'm like, I am. Not well, but I am. And they're like, yeah, that was awesome. It was so much fun. And at the end of the night, you're saying, geez, like I made great tips tonight. So yeah, we were, a lot of our paychecks were also like, we would get half price food, but that we didn't get discount alcohol. So we would be in there hanging out. We'd hang around, you know, after our shift on a Friday, and your money would be going back into the restaurant. So
that's pretty cool that there was a culture that people felt comfortable.
Absolutely.
Like your night off, you're eating wings and drinking beer where you work every other night.
Yeah. You're not going in and teaching grade threes or fours on your day off.
No,
it's not the same.
I did not go to the grocery store when I wasn't working.
Yeah.
But you know, some people did. There were, it's funny. It's strange brew. We'd be in there, and the minute we'd step outside for lunch, so-and-so would show up. We're like, what are you doing here? He's like, where else am I going to be? Like, it was really, you know what? Part of me, I feel a sadness because some of these people, their life context just took them down a road that this was it. So even on the nights that they had off, they'd work like, you know, 15 days in a row, then they'd get one off. They're there at 4 a.m, 3 a.m. It's like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah. Like,
the other thing too is what I worked so hard to stay away from was getting used to being up all night and sleeping all day. So I fought that as best as I could. So if I worked like five nights in a row, I would fight my body. So I would sometimes not have a nap during the day. So I would come home, I'd sleep, and then I'd go to school, and then I'd come home, and I would try everything in my power to not sleep again. Because if I did, that means when I came home the next morning at 8 a.m., I'd be wired until like 2. And I did not want to turn into that. And that's what some of these people did. Some of these people just couldn't sleep. Like they just, everything was messed up for them. And I didn't want that to happen to me.
Totally.
So, hey, maybe if we get an April break, and I know over the Christmas break, I guess the three of us were just gassed. We had nothing left. But if we could find something within us over the Easter break, not Easter, sorry, April break.
Yeah, I'm down.
It'd be great to have to get together and do an episode, kind of a check-in on where we're at with our leadership process.
I've asked a few people, and the three people that I've asked, the best way I can frame their response was nervous. They were not. Now, I think it's hard not to feel, you know, some of the nervous energy of being in education right now. But I also think that it's, it might feel kind of nervous to be a leader in education right now. There's a whole lot of stuff is constantly changing. Stuff like everything right now is, I think it's lighting up the amygdala right now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm asking people, hey, you want to come and talk on a podcast about leadership? They're like, what? What? It's like shopping at your grocery store. You're not going there on your day off. You're not, you know what I mean? Like you're not hanging out there afterwards. So to sort of starting to realize sometimes these discussions are, you know, when they're sort of small T trauma inducing. Okay, you want to talk about leadership after I've just spent 65 hours this week having to do leadership? I'm like, yeah. And they're like, no. Check back with me in X amount of time. So this is kind of an interesting, I think this is a very interesting phenomenon right now with this particular podcast, because part of our mandate was to try to get people to come talk to us, right? And have people want to talk. But we're doing it in a year where that's a bit of an itchy sweater topic. Like people just know if I'm not, no, I don't want to do any more online stuff. No, I don't want to dig deeper into leadership because it's already up over my head right now. And no, I need to focus on my wellness. So anyone that has talked to us so far, thank you, thank you, thank you, right?
Yeah, 100%.
But starting to realize there's a bit of a, it's way too loaded right now. I'll still ask, but.
Well, before the Christmas break, I asked two people, I asked two principals in my board, and they both, neither one of them said no. They're like, yeah, that sounds good. Like, tell me more or whatever. And then got my flat tire and that was it. Like, I haven't spoken to them about it. So I know two people that might be interested. Ramona just said she's good for April break and she knows someone who's hip to joining us.
Mm.
Maybe we could even do like a, if it's an hour that we normally would go or an hour and a half, maybe the first half an hour could just be the three of us catching up.
Yep.
Then our guest could come in and we could talk because I'm really wanting to talk to the two of you. As my trusted colleagues in leadership, I'm really interested in kind of going down that road.
Mm-hmm.
Shoot, I had something I wanted to say, and now it's gone. Oh, the mentoree. So the mentoree, for people that don't know what the mentoree is, it's an Ontario initiative that's run privately. It's not like a public thing. Yeah, it's a private mentor. Frick, I don't even know what to call it, Chris. It's a, if you're in education and you're looking for a mentor, a teacher mentor or a leader mentor, you can sign up with the mentoree, once known as on-ed mentors, and you can be connected to someone who either you can mentor them or they can mentor you. It's one of those two-way street things. Long story short, I'm part of the mentoree. I signed up as a mentor, but I've also been looking to find a leader to mentor me. Mm. And there was a principal. There is a principal who is part of the mentoree that mentors people who are interested in leadership. I remember connecting with him early, but then I got a flat tire. That's what I'm going to call it when I'm exhausted of the work I do. I'm going to call it a flat tire. So start of the school year comes, reach out to this person. I say, this is what I'm interested in. The person's like, that's awesome. I'm already mentoring somebody, but I'm happy to answer your questions or whatever. And then got my flat tire. So recently, Noah Daniel, who I would say runs the mentoree, she's got some partners, but I'm going to say she runs it. She reached out to me and said, hey, we just got someone who signed up to be a mentor who is a principal. Are you still interested? And I was like, yes. And it's Peter LeBlanc, who you and I both know from Ontario Education, and he was a member of the book club for men. So we know him well. He knows us well. And I said, Peter, yeah, 100%, sign me up. So this just happened late this week, and Peter and I have been going back and forth. And I have to tell you, there is something really sweet, and I think I'm going to put together a blog post, but there's something really sweet about having someone to talk to in a realm that you're interested in that's not directly connected to the work you do every day. Mm. So like my current principal is a huge mentor for me, and I love talking to him about the job and about my school board, but I think it's safe to say there's certain things I'd probably rather not talk to him about just because we're both so connected to the system we work in. And let's not forget, he still is my boss, right? So I can't just let that one go. He still is my immediate supervisor. So I was talking to Peter, and it was like a great kickoff in terms of, you know, one of the things Peter said was the fact that he's been in our book club for men's space. He knows that we've established rapport and safe places for people to talk about whatever it is that comes to mind while we're meeting. And this is one of the things that he brought to me as like a real, like something that's lighting him up, that he's like, this is awesome. We already know each other. We've already been in a space where we could speak freely and honestly. And he's like, I really hope that we can, he's like, I'm all in, I'm ready to do that. And I'm like, I'm all in, I'm ready to talk to you honestly about my thoughts and about mm-hmm. the political process of the colonial system that I might want to sign up to be a formal leader in, right? I wanted to share that because, you know, I'm sure if we asked Peter to come on and talk to us about leadership, I'm sure he would say yes. Now, he's still in Belgium, so there's that whole time thing for him. But I believe he's coming back to Ontario this summer. So I just wanted to throw that out there. We've been going for a little over an hour, Chris, and you've mm-hmm. already drawn the picture. I don't think Ramona saw it. Can you show it again? She's going to have no context, but hey, Ramona, that's what happens when you come late to the party. It's the chicken burger.
Okay. Yeah, chicken burger. That's like, dude, that's 100% chicken.
Literally, yeah. We're getting all the parts.
How often do you get 100%? That's not like thigh or leg or, you know, breast meat. It is actually 100% chicken.
I like how the chicken's peeking through the top.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
I really enjoy that.
Yeah, you gotta have the head, the hole for the head and the hole for the tail. That chicken's gotta be comfortable in that bun.
And then Ramona's making a comment, McChicken. I would say not even McDonald's goes that
deep. Dude, there is no way there's that much chicken in a chicken in a McChicken, right?
No way. Like, no way.
I will say probably somewhere between, you know, like the beak and the eyes and whatever that thing's called. There's probably a whole lot of that in there. In their chicken burgers, maybe a little bit of tail. Yeah.
Ramona would know because she worked at McDonald's. She knows all the secrets. Okay. So
that's button number 3 on the deep fryer.
Okay. So before we end this, I'd like to say, I'm going to be having some cake today.
Oh, back to the cake. Yeah.
I'm going to be having a piece of cake.
I will too. Celebrate. I will too.
And Chris will too.
So, yeah, the conversation before we got started. So, I've taken on the interim headship for special education at my high school. So, yeah, so it's, I'll be doing that. It's a short-term position with the potential of being extended to the end of the school year. So it's cool. Excited, interested. What's interesting, and you called this one out, the short-term part of it is like really short-term. So it's sort of 2 weeks that this term actually is. And then the possibility of it being extended around, you know, April 9th or 10th, longer than that. But you asked a good question. It's like, what do you do? What do you do with a position of responsibility that's only two weeks long?
Yeah,
2 weeks long. You give it your all, right? That's it. You give it your all, and then you kind of go from there. So there's not a plan yet. This just was decided yesterday that this is a thing. So on Monday, I'll have more thoughts to share as we go. But that's awesome. Here's what I love about the friendship. You mentioning, you know, us communicating on some of our socials. You're like, dude, you got to get some cake to celebrate this. You got to do something. And then I see you pause because we do the video stuff. And you're like, I'm going to get cake. I'm going to get cake for myself and celebrate this 2 week interim placement. And it was infectious. And I was thinking to myself, you know what? I was just kind of keeping it just kind of cool. You know, I am looking forward to it, but I've told you my story about getting overexcited. When I was a kid, I used to get migraines, and it's something that I've carried forward with me that I try and stay that midline. But you've convinced me. I'm gonna go for the deep and delicious the freezer cake. Yeah, I'm gonna go there.
I might go there. So when you told me, I'm like, dude, congratulations, you got to celebrate. And my first question was, what does a head of spaghetti do when their head for only 2 weeks?
2 weeks.
How much trouble can you get yourself into? So I basically said the board gave him the keys to a Ferrari and said, here, drive this around for 2 weeks and don't get any dents in the car. Yeah. And then I was like, where's the cake? So Clough, I didn't know if he'd celebrate or not. So I'm like, well, frig, I'll get a piece of cake and I'll celebrate for you. So that's good. Ramona said that she did the same thing last year. Congrats to you, Chris. She enjoyed our conversation. Now she's going to do some math prep. I'm not going to do any math prep today, but what I am going to do is I am going to get some cake when I go to the grocery store. And now I'm thinking now, why not get the deep and delicious? I'm going to tweet out a pic of me and my deep and delicious piece of cake.
Okay.
It's going to be good stuff. So thanks for a good one. I know we missed last week. Sorry about that.
No, that's how we roll here. So that's all good.
Life stepped in. Oh, Ramona wants cake now too.
She's going to, it's so easy. Like, tell me it's, there we go. It's so easy, isn't it? You're fortunate. I'm going to guess that lemon zucchini cake is not, you know, McCain's deep and delicious, but I love the fact that she's got cake ready. Like, today is a good day for cake.
That'd be hilarious though if McCain was like, check out our new line of lemon zucchini cake.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, that's enough of that. This was season 4, episode 28 of the Decoded Podcast. I'll
put it up one more time, just in case people didn't see it. Our 100%
100% chicken burger, baby.
Yep, that's in the that's the back lot farm at Decoded Studios.
Nice, right? That's what we eat at Decoded Studios.
Yeah, it's the BLF, the back lot farm. We eat 100% chicken here, beaks, tail and all.
The thing on the head that we don't know what it is.
Is it a crop? No, it's a, I'll Google it later.
There's your homework for the week, Clough. Have a good one.